2070, when a scientist, Frederick Hallam, notices that ordinary tungsten 186 is strangely being converted into a mysterious plutonium 186, which has too many protons and should be unstable. Hallam theorizes that this strange plutonium 186 comes from a parallel universe where the nuclear force is much stronger, so it overcomes the repulsion of the protons. Since this strange plutonium 186 gives off large amounts of energy in the form of electrons, it can be harnessed to give fabulous amounts of free energy. This makes possible the celebrated Hallam electron pump, which solves Earth's energy crisis, making him a wealthy man. But there is a price to pay. If enough alien plutonium 186 enters our universe, then the nuclear force in general will increase in intensity. This means more energy will be released from the fusion process, and the sun will brighten and eventually explode, destroying the entire solar system. Meanwhile, the aliens in the parallel universe have a different perspective. Their universe is dying. The nuclear force is quite strong in their universe, meaning that the stars have been consuming hydrogen at an enormous rate and will soon die. They set up the exchange whereby useless plutonium 186 is sent to our universe in exchange for valuable tungsten 186, which allows them to create the positron pump, which saves their dying world. Although they realize that the nuclear force will increase in strength in our universe, causing our stars to explode, they don't care. Earth, it seems, is headed for disaster. Humanity has become addicted to Hallam's free energy, refusing to believe that the sun will soon explode. Another scientist comes up with an ingenious solution to this conundrum. He is convinced that other parallel universes must exist. He successfully modifies a powerful atom smasher to create a hole in space that connects our universe to many others. Searching among them, he finally finds one parallel universe that is empty except for a cosmic egg containing unlimited amounts of energy, but with a weaker nuclear force. By siphoning energy from this cosmic egg, he can create a new energy pump and at the same time weaken the nuclear force in our universe, thus preventing the sun from exploding. There is, however, a price to be paid. This new parallel universe will have its nuclear force increased, causing it to explode. But he reasons that this explosion will merely cause the cosmic egg to hatch, creating a new Big Bang. In effect, he realizes he will become a midwife to a new expanding universe. Asimov's science fiction tale is one of the few to actually use the laws of nuclear physics to spin a tale of greed, intrigue, and salvation. Asimov was correct in assuming that changing the strength of the forces in our universe would have disastrous consequences, that the stars in our universe would brighten and then explode if the nuclear force was increased in strength. This raises the inevitable question: are parallel universes consistent with the laws of physics? And if so, what would be required to enter one? To understand these questions, we must first understand the nature of wormholes, negative energy, and, of course, those mysterious objects called black holes. Black holes. In 1783, British astronomer John Michell was the first to wonder what would happen if a star became so large that light itself could not escape. Any object, he knew, had an escape velocity, the velocity required to leave its gravitational pull. For Earth, for example, the escape velocity is 25,000 miles per hour, the speed that any rocket must attain in order to break free of Earth's gravity. Michell wondered what might happen if a star became so massive that its escape velocity was equal to the speed of light. Its gravity would be so immense that nothing could escape it, not even light itself, and hence the object would appear black to the outside world. Finding such an object in space would in some sense be impossible, since it would be invisible. The question of Michell's dark stars was largely forgotten for a century and a half. But the matter resurfaced in 1916 when Karl Schwarzschild, a German physicist serving the German army on the Russian front, found an exact solution of Einstein's equations for a massive star. Even today, the Schwarzschild solution is known to be the simplest and most elegant exact solution of Einstein's equations. Einstein was astonished that Schwarzschild could find a solution to his complex tensor equations while dodging artillery shells. He was equally astonished that Schwarzschild's solution had peculiar properties. The Schwarzschild solution, from a distance, could represent the gravity of an ordinary star, and Einstein quickly used the solution to calculate the gravity surrounding the Sun and check his earlier calculations in which he had made approximations. For this, he was eternally thankful to Schwarzschild, but in Schwarzschild's second paper, he showed that surrounding a very massive star, there was an imaginary magic sphere with bizarre properties. This magic sphere was the point of no return. Anyone passing through the magic sphere would be immediately sucked by gravity into the star, never to be seen again. Not even light could escape if it fell into this sphere. Schwarzschild did not recognize that he was rediscovering Mitchell's dark star through Einstein's equations. He next calculated the radius for this magic sphere, called the Schwarzschild radius. For an object the size of our Sun, the magic sphere was about 3 kilometers, roughly 2 miles. For Earth, its Schwarzschild radius was about 1 centimeter. This meant that if one could compress the Sun down to 2 miles, then it would become a dark star and devour any object that passed this point of no return. Experimentally, the existence of the magic sphere caused no problems, since it was impossible to squeeze the Sun down to 2 miles. No mechanism was known to create such a fantastic star, but theoretically it was a disaster. Although Einstein's general theory of relativity could yield brilliant results, like the bending of starlight around the Sun, the theory made no sense as you approached the magic sphere itself, where gravity became infinite. A Dutch physicist, Johannes Droste, then showed that the solution was even crazier. According to relativity, light beams, he showed, would bend severely as they whipped around the object. In fact, at 1.5 times the Schwarzschild radius, light beams actually orbited in circles around the star. Droste showed that the distortions of time found in general relativity around these massive stars were much worse than those found in special relativity. He showed that as you approached this magic sphere, someone from a distance would say that your clocks were getting slower and slower, until your clocks stopped totally when you hit the object. In fact, someone from the outside would say that you were frozen in time as you reached the magic sphere. Because time itself would stop at this point, some physicists believed that such a bizarre object could never exist in nature. To make matters even more interesting, mathematician Hermann Weyl showed that if one investigated the world inside the magic sphere, there seemed to be another universe on the other side. This was all so fantastic that even Einstein could not believe it. In 1922, during a conference in Paris, Einstein was asked by mathematician Jacques Hadamard what would happen if this singularity were real, that is, if gravity became infinite at the Schwarzschild radius. Einstein replied, "It would be a true disaster for the theory, and it would be very difficult to say a priori what could happen physically, because the formula does not apply anymore." Einstein would later call this the Hadamard disaster. But he thought that all this controversy around dark stars was pure speculation. First, no one had ever even seen such a bizarre object, and perhaps they didn't exist. That is, they were unphysical. Moreover, you would be crushed to death if you ever fell into one. And since no one could ever pass through the magic sphere, since time has stopped, no one could ever enter this parallel universe. In the 1920s, physicists were thoroughly confused about this issue, but in 1932, an important breakthrough was made by Georges Lemaître, father of the Big Bang theory. He showed that the magic sphere was not a singularity at all, where gravity became infinite. It was just a mathematical illusion caused by choosing an unfortunate set of mathematics. If one chose a different set of coordinates or variables to examine the magic sphere, the singularity disappeared. Taking this result, the cosmologist H.P. Robertson then re-examined Droste's original result, that time stops at the magic sphere. He found that time stopped only from the vantage point of an observer watching a rocket ship enter the magic sphere. From the vantage point of the rocket ship itself, it would only take a fraction of a second for gravity to suck you right past the magic sphere. In other words, a space traveler unfortunate enough to pass through the magic sphere would find himself crushed to death almost instantly. But to an observer watching from the outside, it would appear to take thousands of years. This was an important result. It meant that the magic sphere was reachable and could no longer be dismissed as a mathematical monstrosity. One had to seriously consider what might happen if one passed through the magic sphere. Physicists then calculated what a journey through the magic sphere might look like. Today, the magic sphere is called the event horizon. The horizon refers to the farthest point one can see. Here, it refers to the farthest point light can travel. The radius of the event horizon is called the Schwarzschild radius. As you approached the black hole in a rocket ship, you would see light that had been captured billions of years ago by the black hole, dating back to when the black hole itself was first created. In other words, the life history of the black hole would be revealed to you. As you got closer, tidal forces would gradually rip the atoms of your body apart until even the nuclei of your atoms would look like spaghetti. The journey through the event horizon would be a one-way trip, because gravity would be so intense that you would inevitably be sucked right into the center, where you will be crushed to death. Once inside the event horizon, there could be no turning back. To leave the event horizon, one would have to travel faster than light, which is impossible. In 1939, Einstein wrote a paper in which he tried to dismiss such dark stars, claiming that they cannot be formed by natural processes. He started by assuming that a star forms from a swirling collection of dust, gas, and debris rotating in a sphere, gradually coming together because of gravity. He then showed that this collection of swirling particles will never collapse to within its Schwarzschild radius, and hence will never become a black hole. At best, this swirling mass of particles will approach 1.5 times the Schwarzschild radius, and hence black holes will never form. To go below 1.5 times the Schwarzschild radius, one would have to travel faster than the speed of light, which is impossible. The essential result of this investigation is a clear understanding of why the Schwarzschild singularities do not exist in physical reality, Einstein wrote. Arthur Eddington, too, had deep reservations about black holes and bore a lifelong suspicion that they could never exist. He once said that there should be a law of nature to prevent a star from behaving in this absurd way. Ironically, that same year, J. Robert Oppenheimer, who would later build the atomic bomb, and his student, Hartland Snyder, showed that a black hole could indeed form via another mechanism. Instead of assuming that a black hole came about from a swirling collection of particles collapsing under gravity, they used as their starting point an old, massive star that had used up its nuclear fuel and hence implodes under the force of gravity. For example, a dying giant star, 40 times the mass of the Sun, might exhaust its nuclear fuel and be compressed by gravity to within its Schwarzschild radius of 80 miles, in which case it would inevitably collapse into a black hole. Black holes, they suggested, were not only possible, they might be the natural endpoint for billions of dying giant stars in the galaxy. Perhaps the idea of implosion, pioneered in 1939 by Oppenheimer, gave him the inspiration for the implosion mechanism used in the atomic bomb just a few years later. Einstein-Rosen Bridge. Although Einstein thought that black holes were too incredible to exist in nature, he then ironically showed that they were even stranger than anyone thought, allowing for the possibility of wormholes lying at the heart of a black hole. Mathematicians call them multiply connected spaces. Physicists call them wormholes because, like a worm drilling into the earth, they create an alternative shortcut between two points. They are sometimes called dimensional portals or gateways. Whatever you call them, they may one day provide the ultimate means for interdimensional travel. The first person to popularize wormholes was Charles Dodgson, who wrote under the pen name of Lewis Carroll. In Through the Looking Glass, he introduced the wormhole as the looking glass, which connected the countryside of Oxford to Wonderland. As a professional mathematician and Oxford don, Dodgson was familiar with these multiply connected spaces. By definition, a multiply connected space is one in which a lasso cannot be shrunk down to a point. Usually, any loop can effortlessly be collapsed to a point. But if we analyze a donut, then it's possible to place the lasso on its surface so that it encircles the donut hole. As we slowly collapse the loop, we find that it cannot be compressed to a point. At best, it can be shrunk to the circumference of the hole. Mathematicians delighted in the fact that they had found an object that was totally useless in describing space. But in 1935, Einstein and his student Nathan Rosen introduced wormholes into the world of physics. They were trying to use the black hole solution as a model for elementary particles. Einstein never liked the idea, dating back to Newton, that a particle's gravity became infinite as you approached it. This singularity, thought Einstein, should be removed because it made no sense. Einstein and Rosen had the novel idea of representing an electron, which was usually thought of as a tiny point without any structure, as a black hole. In this way, general relativity could be used to explain the mysteries of the quantum world in a unified field theory. They started with the standard black hole solution, which resembles a large vase with a long throat. Then they cut the throat and merged it with another black hole solution that was flipped over. To Einstein, this strange but smooth configuration would be free of the singularity at the origin of the black hole and might act like an electron. Unfortunately, Einstein's idea of representing an electron as a black hole failed. But today, cosmologists speculate that the Einstein-Rosen bridge can act as a gateway between two universes. We could move about freely in one universe until accidentally falling into a black hole, where we would suddenly be sucked through the hole to emerge on the other side, through a white hole. To Einstein, any solution of his equations, if it began with a physically plausible starting point, should correspond to a physically possible object. But he wasn't worried about someone falling into a black hole and entering a parallel universe. The tidal forces would become infinite at the center, and anyone unfortunate enough to fall into a black hole would have their atoms ripped apart by the gravitational field. The Einstein-Rosen bridge does open up momentarily, but it closes so fast that no object can pass through it in time to reach the other side. Einstein's attitude was that while wormholes may exist, living creatures could never pass through one and live to tell about it. Rotating black holes. In 1963, however, this view began to change, when New Zealand mathematician Roy Kerr found an exact solution of Einstein's equation describing perhaps the most realistic dying star, a spinning black hole. Because of the conservation of angular momentum, as a star collapses under gravity, it spins faster. This is the same reason why spinning galaxies look like pinwheels, and why skaters spin faster when they bring their arms in. A spinning star could collapse into a ring of neutrons, which would remain stable because of the intense centrifugal force pushing outward, canceling the inward force of gravity. The astonishing feature of such a black hole was that if you fell into the Kerr black hole, you would not be crushed to death. Instead, you would be sucked completely through the Einstein-Rosen bridge to a parallel universe. Pass through this magic ring, and presto, you're in a completely different universe, where radius and mass are negative, Kerr exclaimed to a colleague when he discovered this solution. The frame of Alice's looking glass, in other words, was like the spinning ring of Kerr. But any trip through the Kerr ring would be a one-way trip. If you were to pass through the event horizon surrounding the Kerr ring, the gravity would not be enough to crush you to death, but it would be sufficient to prevent a return trip back through the event horizon. The Kerr black hole, in fact, has two event horizons. Some have speculated that you might need a second Kerr ring connecting the parallel universe back to ours in order to make a return trip. In some sense, a Kerr black hole can be compared to an elevator inside a skyscraper. The elevator represents the Einstein-Rosen bridge, which connects different floors, where each floor is a different universe. In fact, there are an infinite number of floors in this skyscraper, each one different from the others. But the elevator can never go down. There is only an up button. Once you leave a floor or universe, there would be no turning back, because you would have passed an event horizon. Physicists are divided about how stable a Kerr ring would be. Some calculations suggest that if one tried to pass through the ring, the person's very presence would destabilize the black hole, and the gateway would close. If a light beam, for example, were to pass into the Kerr black hole, it would gain enormously in energy as it fell toward the center and become blue-shifted, that is, it would increase in frequency and energy. As it approached the horizon, it would have so much energy that it would kill anyone trying to pass through the Einstein-Rosen bridge. It would also generate its own gravitational field, which would interfere with the original black hole, perhaps destroying the gateway. In other words, while some physicists believe that the Kerr black hole is the most realistic of all black holes and could indeed connect parallel universes, it is not clear how safe it would be to enter the bridge or how stable the doorway would be. Observing black holes. Because of the bizarre properties of black holes, as late as the early 1990s, their existence was still considered science fiction. 10 years ago, if you found an object that you thought was a black hole in the center of a galaxy, half the field thought you were a little nuts, remarked astronomer Douglas Richstone of the University of Michigan in 1998. Since then, astronomers have identified several hundred black holes in outer space via the Hubble Space Telescope, the Chandra X-ray Space Telescope, which measures X-ray emissions from powerful stellar and galactic sources, and the Very Large Array Radio Telescope, which consists of a series of powerful radio telescopes in New Mexico. Many astronomers believe, in fact, that most of the galaxies in the heavens, which have central bulges at the center of their disks, have black holes at their centers. As predicted, all of the black holes found in space are rotating very rapidly. Some have been clocked by the Hubble Space Telescope, rotating at about 1 million miles per hour. At the very center, one can see a flat, circular core, often about a light year across. Inside that core lies the event horizon and the black hole itself. Because black holes are invisible, astronomers have to use indirect means to verify their existence. In photographs, they try to identify the accretion disk of swirling gas that surrounds the black hole. Astronomers have now collected beautiful photographs of these accretion disks. these disks are almost universally found for most rapidly spinning objects in the universe. Even our own sun probably had a similar disk surrounding it when it formed 4.5 billion years ago, which later condensed into the planets. The reason these disks form is that they represent the lowest state of energy for such a rapidly spinning object. By using Newton's laws of motion, astronomers can calculate the mass of the central object by knowing the velocity of the stars orbiting around it. If the mass of the central object has an escape velocity equal to the speed of light, then even light itself cannot escape, providing indirect proof of the existence of a black hole. The event horizon lies at the center of the accretion disk. It is unfortunately too small to be identified with current technology. Astronomer Fulvio Melia claims that capturing the event horizon of a black hole on film is the holy grail of black hole science. Not all the gas that falls toward a black hole passes through the event horizon. Some of it bypasses the event horizon and is hurled past it at huge velocities and ejected into space, forming two long jets of gas emanating from the black hole's north and south poles. This gives the black hole the appearance of a spinning top. The reason jets are ejected like this is probably that the magnetic field lines of the collapsing star, as they become more intense, become concentrated above the north and south poles. As the star continues to collapse, these magnetic field lines condense into two tubes emanating from the north and south poles. As ionized particles fall into the collapsed star, they follow these narrow magnetic lines of force and are ejected as jets via the north and south polar magnetic fields. Two types of black holes have been identified. The first is the stellar black hole, in which gravity crushes a dying star until it implodes. The second, however, is more easily detected. These are galactic black holes, which lurk at the very centers of huge galaxies and quasars and weigh millions to billions of solar masses. Recently, a black hole was conclusively identified in the center of our own Milky Way galaxy. Unfortunately, dust clouds obscure the galactic center. If not for that, a huge fireball would be visible to us on Earth every night, coming from the direction of the constellation Sagittarius. Without the dust, the center of our Milky Way galaxy would probably outshine the moon, making it the brightest object in the night sky. At the very center of this galactic nucleus lies a black hole that weighs about 2.5 million solar masses. In terms of its size, it is about a tenth of the radius of the orbit of Mercury. By galactic standards, this is not an especially massive black hole. Quasars can have black holes that weigh several billion solar masses. The black hole in our backyard is rather quiescent at present. The next closest galactic black hole lies at the center of the Andromeda Galaxy, the closest galaxy to Earth. It weighs 30 million solar masses, and its Schwarzschild radius is about 60 million miles. At the center of the Andromeda Galaxy lie at least two massive objects, probably the leftovers of a previous galaxy that was devoured by Andromeda billions of years ago. If the Milky Way Galaxy eventually collides with Andromeda billions of years from now, as appears likely, perhaps our galaxy will wind up in the stomach of the Andromeda Galaxy. One of the most beautiful photographs of a galactic black hole is the one taken by the Hubble Space Telescope of the galaxy NGC 4261. In the past, radio telescope pictures of this galaxy showed two very graceful jets being shot out of the galaxy's north and south poles, but no one knew what the engine behind it was. The Hubble telescope photographed the very center of the galaxy, revealing a beautiful disk about 400 light-years across. At its very center was a tiny dot containing the accretion disk, about a light-year across. The black hole at the center, which could not be seen by the Hubble telescope, weighs approximately 1.2 billion solar masses. Galactic black holes like this are so powerful they can consume entire stars. In 2004, NASA and the European Space Agency announced that they had detected a huge black hole in a distant galaxy devouring a star in a single gulp. The Chandra X-ray Telescope and the European XMM Newton satellite both observed the same event, a burst of X-rays being emitted by the galaxy RXJ1242-2, signaling that a star had been gobbled up by the huge black hole at the center. This black hole has been estimated to weigh 100 million times the mass of our sun. Calculations have shown that, as a star comes perilously close to the event horizon of a black hole, the enormous gravity distorts and stretches the star until it breaks apart, emitting a telltale burst of X-rays. This star was stretched beyond its breaking point. This unlucky star just wandered into the wrong neighborhood, observed astronomer Stephanie Camossa of the Max Planck Institute in Garching, Germany. The existence of black holes has helped to solve many old mysteries. The galaxy M87, for example, was always a curiosity to astronomers because it looked like a massive ball of stars with a strange tail emerging from it. Because it emitted copious quantities of radiation, at one point astronomers thought that this tail represented a stream of antimatter. But today, astronomers have found that it is energized by a huge black hole, weighing perhaps 3 billion solar masses. And that strange tail is now believed to be a gigantic jet of plasma, which is streaming out of, not into, the galaxy. One of the more spectacular discoveries concerning black holes occurred when the Chandra X-ray Telescope was able to peer through a small gap in the dust in outer space to observe a collection of black holes near the edge of the visible universe. In all, 600 black holes could be seen. Extrapolating from that, astronomers estimate there are at least 300 million black holes over the entire night sky. Gamma ray bursters. The black holes just mentioned are perhaps billions of years old, but astronomers now have the rare opportunity to see black holes being formed right before our eyes. Some of these are probably the mysterious gamma ray bursters, which release the largest amount of energy in the universe. Huge gamma ray bursters are second only to the Big Bang itself in terms of the energy they release. Gamma ray bursters have a curious history, dating back to the Cold War. In the late 1960s, the United States was worried that the Soviet Union, or another country, might secretly detonate a nuclear bomb, perhaps on a deserted part of the Earth, or even on the Moon, violating existing treaties. So the United States launched the Vela satellite to specifically spot nuke flashes, or unauthorized detonations of nuclear bombs. Because a nuclear detonation unfolds in distinct stages, microsecond by microsecond, each nuke flash gives off a characteristic double flash of light that can be seen by satellite. The Vela satellite did pick up two such nuke flashes in the 1970s off the coast of Prince Edward Island near South Africa, in the presence of Israeli warships, sightings that are still being debated by the intelligence community. But what startled the Pentagon was that the Vela satellite was picking up signs of huge nuclear explosions in space. Was the Soviet Union secretly detonating hydrogen bombs in deep space using an unknown advanced technology? Concerned that the Soviets might have leapfrogged over the U.S. in weapons technology, top scientists were brought in to analyze these deeply disturbing signals. After the breakup of the Soviet Union, there was no need to classify this information, so the Pentagon dumped a mountain of astronomical data onto the world of astronomy, which was overwhelming. For the first time in decades, an entirely new astronomical phenomenon of immense power and scope had been revealed. Astronomers quickly realized that these gamma-ray bursters, as they were called, were titanic in their power, releasing within seconds the entire energy output of our sun over its entire life history, about 10 billion years. But these events were also fleeting. Once detected by the Vela satellite, they had dimmed so much that by the time ground telescopes were pointed in their direction, nothing could be seen in their wake. Most bursters last between 1 and 10 seconds, but the shortest one lasted 0.01 second, and some lasted as long as several minutes. Today, space telescopes, computers, and rapid response teams have changed our ability to spot gamma-ray bursters. About 3 times a day, gamma-ray bursters are detected, setting off a complex chain of events. As soon as the energy from one is detected by satellite, astronomers using computers rapidly locate its precise coordinates and aim more telescopes and sensors in its precise direction. The data from these instruments has revealed truly astounding results. At the heart of these gamma-ray bursters lies an object often only a few tens of miles across. In other words, the unimaginable cosmic power of gamma-ray bursters is concentrated within an area the size of, say, New York City. For years, the leading candidates for such events were colliding neutron stars in a binary star system. According to this theory, as the orbit of these neutron stars decayed over time, and as they followed a death spiral, they would ultimately collide and create a mammoth release of energy. Such events are extremely rare, but because the universe is so large, and since these bursters light up the entire universe, they should be seen several times a day. But in 2003, new evidence scientists collected suggested that gamma-ray bursters are the result of a hypernova that creates a massive black hole. By rapidly focusing telescopes and satellites in the direction of gamma-ray bursters, scientists found that they resembled a massive supernova. Since the exploding star has an enormous magnetic field and ejects radiation via its north and south polar directions, it might appear as if the supernova is more energetic than it actually is. That is, we observe these bursters only if they are pointed directly at Earth, giving the false impression that they are more powerful than they really are. If indeed gamma-ray bursters are black holes in formation, then the next generation of space telescopes should be able to analyze them in great detail and perhaps answer some of our deepest questions about space and time. Specifically, if black holes can bend space into a pretzel, can they also bend time? Van Stockham's Time Machine. Einstein's theory links space and time into an inseparable unity. As a result, any wormhole that connects two distant points in space might also connect two distant points in time. In other words, Einstein's theory allows for the possibility of time travel. The concept of time itself has evolved over the centuries. To Newton, time was like an arrow. Once fired, it never changed course and traveled unerringly and uniformly to its target. Einstein then introduced the concept of warped space, so time was more like a river that gently speeded up or slowed down as it meandered through the universe. But Einstein worried about the possibility that perhaps the river of time could bend back on itself. Perhaps there could be whirlpools or forks in the river of time. In 1937, this possibility was realized when W.J. Van Stockham found a solution to Einstein's equations which permitted time travel. He began with an infinite spinning cylinder. Although it's not physically possible to build an infinite object, he calculated that if such a cylinder spun around at or near the speed of light, it would drag the fabric of space-time along with it, much like molasses is dragged along with the blades of a blender. This is called frame dragging, and it has now been experimentally seen in detailed photographs of rotating black holes. Anyone brave enough to travel around the cylinder would be swept along, attaining fantastic speeds. In fact, to a distant observer, it would appear that the individual was exceeding the speed of light. Although Van Stockham himself did not realize it at the time, by making a complete trip around the cylinder, you could actually go back in time, returning before you left. If you left at noon, then by the time you returned to your starting point, say, it might be 6 p.m. the previous night. The faster the cylinder spun, the further back in time you would go. The only limitation being that you could not go further back in time than the creation of the cylinder itself. Since the cylinder is like a maypole, every time you danced around the pole, you would wind up further and further back in time. Of course, one could dismiss such a solution because cylinders cannot be infinitely long. Also, if such a cylinder could be built, the centrifugal forces on the cylinder, because it spins near the speed of light, would be enormous, causing the material that made up the cylinder to fly apart. Gödel Universe. In 1949, Kurt Gödel, the great mathematical logician, found an even stranger solution to Einstein's equations. He assumed that the entire universe was rotating. Like the Van Stockham cylinder, one is swept up by the molasses-like nature of space-time. By taking a rocket ship around the Gödel universe, you return to your starting point, but shift back in time. In Gödel's universe, a person can, in principle, travel between any two points in space and time in the universe. Every event, in any time period, can be visited, no matter how distant in the past. Because of gravity, there is a tendency for Gödel's universe to collapse on itself. Hence, the centrifugal force of rotation must balance this gravitational force. In other words, the universe must spin above a certain speed. The larger the universe, the greater the tendency to collapse, and the faster the universe would have to spin to prevent collapse. For a universe our size, for example, Gödel calculated that it would have to rotate once every 70 billion years, and the minimum radius for time travel would be 16 billion light years. To travel back in time, however, you would have to travel just below the speed of light. Gödel was well aware of the paradoxes that could arise from his solution, the possibility of meeting yourself in the past and altering the course of history. By making a round trip on a rocket ship in a sufficiently wide course, it is possible in these worlds to travel into any region of the past, present, and future, and back again, exactly as it is possible in other worlds to travel to distant parts of space, he wrote. This state of affairs seems to imply an absurdity, for it enables one to travel into the near past of those places where he has himself lived. There he would find a person who would be himself at some earlier period of life. Now he could do something to this person, which, by his memory, he knows has not happened to him. Einstein was deeply disturbed by the solution found by his friend and neighbor at the Institute for Advanced Study at Princeton. His response is quite revealing. Kurt Gödel's essay constitutes, in my opinion, an important contribution to the general theory of relativity, especially to the analysis of the concept of time. The problem here involved disturbed me already at the time of the building up of the general theory of relativity, without my having succeeded in clarifying it. The distinction earlier-later is abandoned for world points which lie far apart in a cosmological sense, and those paradoxes regarding the direction of the causal connection arise, of which Mr. Gödel has spoken. It will be interesting to weigh whether these are not to be excluded on physical grounds. Einstein's response is interesting for two reasons. First, he admitted that the possibility of time travel bothered him when he first formulated general relativity. Since time and space are treated like a piece of rubber that can bend and warp, Einstein worried that the fabric of space-time would warp so much that time travel might be possible. Second, he ruled out Gödel's solution on the basis of physical grounds. That is, the universe does not spin. It expands. When Einstein died, it was widely known that his equations allowed for strange phenomena,